Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy's Andy Baskin. We go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline to get a little more insight into what happened last night. He's Matt Moore, senior NBA analyst from the Action Network, host of the Locked On NBA podcast. Matt, great to have you back with us. How are you?
Doing well. How are y'all?
Hey.
We're doing well. We had a good basketball game here last night. Kind of felt to me the first team that decided it wanted to play some defense in the second half was the team that was going to win, and that team turned out to be the Cavaliers. The Cavs now sitting really, really pretty, best record in the East. How legit are they in your mind? And I don't mean regular season legit. I mean championship caliber legit.
I mean, they're championship caliber. I don't think you can look at this. At some point, winning the games has to matter. And I know that it's like, well, it's a regular season. Okay, but again, if we look back at the history of the NBA, teams that have exceptional regular seasons are in those kind of conversations. I look back at the teams that have won 30 games out of their first 35, and the list is primarily, like, I mean, it's all champions with a handful of disappointments. It's definitely possible, but, like, the odds are that this team makes a conference finals, and then you're in that final four, and you're in the mix for a title. That's where Cleveland undeniably is. Do I love the matchup with Boston? I don't, but I'll tell you this. I don't think Boston's as good as last year, and I don't know that they're going to be able to get to the conference finals, depending on who they face. As much as people, like, kind of underrate the Eastern Conference, there's a lot of really good teams and really good coaches there, and I think there's some weaknesses there. And if the Cavs go up against anybody but Boston, I'm going to like Cleveland to advance to the finals. And if they get there, I'm probably going to like Cleveland to win the title. They're balanced. They're getting better on defense. They have lineup versatility. They can match up with however they need to, and they've got multiple guys now. Darius Garland, I think, is one of the best stories in the NBA after the season he had last year. This team is absolutely legit.
When you look at Evan Mobley, what goes through your mind, too? Because I know Jeff and I talk about this all the time, and you know, we sat here for a year or two and said they will go as Evan Mobley goes, and you know, he has really advanced his game this year, but I want your thoughts.
Yeah, so the best thing here is, you know, it's kind of a reminder of not to put too high of expectations on guys when they come into the league with his profile, because there was this expectation for him to be a dominant player immediately, and instead it was like, wow, he's going to be a really great defender. But what about the offense? And much like Jaren Jackson Jr., who's having an incredible year for the Grizzlies, like, Mobley started to add go-to moves into his offense. He understands his spots. He understands his shots. And he's finding ways to get to those more and more consistently. He's understanding how to manage the matchups that he's faced with. And what's great about Mobley right now is that he's able to fill in the gaps where Darius creates downhill and draws help, and he hits those little flip shots. Or he gets a mismatch underneath, and he's finishing at the rim. His ability to kind of do what they need makes him so much more valuable in today's NBA, especially as a big man. And then you add on top of it his defensive instinct. He was the best defender on Shea by a mile. If they meet up in the finals, Evan needs to probably take the full-time assignment on Shea, and that's incredible for a power forward center. So I think that, you know, as far as like what he can be, I don't know what that looks like. It depends on how his offensive game develops. But he's already one of the most impactful players in the league. He's a serious candidate for DPOY, and he's only getting better offensively.
Matt Moore joining us, senior NBA analyst from the Action Network, Locked On NBA podcast. The backcourt has been obviously one of the keys to this thing since they brought Donovan Mitchell to town. Do you like the combination of Mitchell and Garland? It obviously clicks in the regular season. Can it carry you into the postseason and beyond?
Yeah, so I think the key here is that you need the matchup optionality. I understand the idea of, like, we've always seen superstars be the best in the playoffs. Are we really seeing that now? Like, I don't look at the Celtics last year. Jason Tatum wasn't the best player on Boston last year, and they won the title. We're seeing this kind of evolve with where the game is at and how the CBA has changed things dramatically. And so there may be a series where, yeah, Donovan's going to go off. They don't have any sort of matchup for him. He's in a groove. He's able to take advantage of that matchup, and he's the best player for the Cavs. The next round, oh, they've got a defender who can actually kind of neutralize Mitchell in a scheme to take him out of it. Garland's going to step up and be the difference. Maybe it's the front court. You know, their ability to win with different ways is so big, because right now in the NBA, in this kind of era of parity, it really is about your matchups. And having two guys with different skill sets, And I want to give Donovan Mitchell a ton of credit because he's taken a step back this year in terms of how much he dominates the ball and his role. He could be chasing stats to try and win MVP, and he's not. And his taking a step back has allowed them to be better, and he deserves a lot of credit for that.
I think a lot of fans, and I know we're still sitting here just after the new year, but and I think Cavalier fans have kind of accepted where we are in this position with Kenny Atchison. Just your thoughts on what he's been able to do in such a short period of time, and what exactly did J.B. Bickerstaff leave for him that the cupboard was – I mean, the cupboard was clearly not bare. He just had to rearrange the food, right? Is that the way it looks?
I think it's more of like this. It's okay, so I think J.B. cooked good meals.
Okay.
But there wasn't enough seasoning, and Atkinson brought the spice. And, like, that to me is really what it comes down to.
Nice.
Because if you look at it, J.B.'s doing a great job in Detroit. He's doing a phenomenal job in Detroit because he's able to install good systems that work. He gets your offense to generate good shots. He gets your defense to allow only pretty bad shots. He increases discipline and accountability. All of those things were evident with Cleveland. But the problem was he couldn't make the players individually better. And that's what I think Atkinson has done, is he's getting the most out of Darius. He's getting the most out of Mobley. He's getting the most out of Caris LeVert. What Atkinson's done is maximize on both an individual skill and within the flow of the game, those players' abilities. So he is putting those guys in the best position and the team in the best position, whereas JB was really good at putting the team in a good position to win. Like, JB set the table, and Atkinson's putting together the final finished meal.
If you're the Cavs and you're Kobe Altman, you're Mike Gansey, you're sitting there watching this, you're winning games like crazy, you have the best regular season record in the NBA, and you know you're a front office that has always tinkered with the roster by the trade deadline, what are you thinking now?
I mean, from everything I've heard, they're still shopping. They still want another wing. I think the idea is, you know, when you're in the Cavs position, you don't need a primary ball handler, you don't need a backup point guard, and you don't need front court help because you can stagger Jarrett and Mobley. So you're set. Like, you're set at the biggest kind of question marks in the league right now. But the idea has been in the league, and it continues to be, you could never have enough wings. And if you can get an upgrade where it's like, yeah, we like Max Strus, can we get one better? Yeah, Okoro's having a great season. Can we get one better? We're 6-1 when Dean Wade plays basketball for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Okay, but can we get one better? And that's the kind of question I think that they're faced with, and that's why they keep looking at the market, is don't close off opportunities, don't be complacent, and if an opportunity arises for you to keep some of that depth but improve some of it, you take it. And that, to me, that's what I continue to hear, is that they're still shopping for one more wing.
How high would you go on your rotation in giving up somebody to make that happen?
I mean, I think outside of the core four and LeVert, I think you got to be open to pretty much everybody, you know. And it's like, me personally, as king of the Dean Wade hive, I would not deal him because of what he brings to the table. But, like, it's still Dean Wade, and you'd have to take a look at those kind of options. It kind of depends on what you're looking at. But also, with how good their roster is, you can have a little bit more flexibility with what you do on your draft assets. You can have a little bit of, you know, versatility with what you do with the young guys. So they've got some options to move around the margins here with a lot of teams who are pretty desperate to make moves given how the CBA is crushing them right now.
How do you think the game played out last night? I mean, I know we're sitting here in Cleveland and we're like, oh, great game, two best teams in the NBA. And I would assume that most guys had their eyes on this game. Most guys and gals that care about the NBA had their eyes on this game last night. And Jeff and I were talking about how the NBA might not exactly love the fact that it's Cleveland, Oklahoma City that are, you know, have dominated the game so far. And if that should turn into what could be an NBA Finals down the road, how do you think most people envisioned last night's game? Good game, you know, two solid teams, but maybe not there at the end. But, like, give me a national perspective on what we watched last night.
I think every national person that covers the NBA loved it and thought it was phenomenal and thought it was such great basketball and a refreshing change of pace. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're excited to see and would love to see these two teams meet in the finals because they're both that good and that interesting and that fun. I think TV executives were crying, and that's an NBA problem. That's a league provider problem. And I want to be clear on this. The NBA takes a lot of flack for this, about them not promoting these type of teams more. The problem is not the NBA. They want to promote all their teams. They really do. They genuinely want to promote all their teams. But the networks are just like, okay, that's fun, but like, could we have LeBron and the Lakers versus the Warriors just like every night? Could we just do that every time? And it's obnoxious, short-sighted, and stupid. Every sports fan, forget basketball fans, any sports fan that watched that game last night would have walked away being like, that was awesome. That's what sports need to be about. That's what sports should be about. That's what the other leagues get, and the NBA has not. And I think last night was great for the league, the sport, and those teams.
I agree with you completely. I can't tell you how tired I get of watching the same teams on the Lakers in particular, and LeBron and Golden State, when right now they're kind of middle of the road teams. I think that's something the NBA has to overcome. The NFL has figured it out, Matt. How does the NBA figure that out?
I think they're working on it. You know, they wanted more parity and they've got it, but they've got to be able to put these new players up there. And I am hopeful, cautiously, very cautiously hopeful, that Amazon and NBC are going to get it, that they're going to actually look at this and be like, hey, what if we didn't talk about how irrelevant everyone is? Hey, what if we talked about how we don't know who any of these players are? What if we actually like celebrated the sport and what's good about it and hyped this as a matchup with stakes? Like, what if we actually treated the game with respect? I'm hopeful that changes next year, starting with a new team. And if it doesn't, I think the biggest thing is just, you got to give these guys opportunities. Shea's number one in the West for guards, for all-star votes. Jokic is number one in the West for front court votes. Like, the people see these guys. Sports fans see these guys. They just don't know them yet because you haven't given them a chance. Give them a chance. Give the Cavaliers a chance, and people are going to walk away really impressed and excited and want to watch them again.
Other than the Cavs, other than the Celtics, if you're looking for somebody to win the Eastern Conference, who would it be?
Everyone's going to say New York, and mine's Orlando. So Orlando is the only team. If you go back and watch their Boston games, they don't let them get up threes. And Boston all of a sudden gets real nervous and real tight when that happens. When they can't just run their offense and throw up 53s a game, it gets really tight. And the question is like, come on, Orlando can't score with them. But we don't know that yet, because when they had Paolo Banchero at the start of the season, they were good enough offensively. Their ball was really moving. They actually were a really good offensive team. Then Paolo goes down, and they get worse, and they fall into the teens. And then Franz goes down, and they fall into the bottom five. So the question is going to be, can they make a trade deadline move that gets them another scorer, any sort of shooter, and can they get Franz and Paolo back healthy? I think with those two guys, by the end of the season, they're the sleeper in the East that could make a real run.
Matt, great to have you with us. Thanks, Matt, for the insight.
Thanks, guys.
Matt Morris, senior NBA analyst for the Action Network. His podcast, the Locked On NBA podcast. Go take a listen. That was Matt Moore, senior NBA analyst from the Action Network, joining us just moments ago here on Baskin and Phelps. That was his response when I asked him, if you're Kobe Altman, you're Mike Gansey, and your team is sitting there with a record of 32-4. And you've always been active at the trade deadline.
Yeah, they have.
What are you thinking now? And that's what he said. He hears they're still looking, and they're looking for a wing. What do you think?
I'm not surprised. I do think that, you know, since the first day Dan Gilbert's family took over this organization, they have always looked every day to upgrade and have never thought twice about how much money they need to spend if they think they can put their team into a championship mode. So I'm not surprised at all that they're looking, but I do think that you're right. And I think this is as close to, I hate to use the word perfect, but, you know, it was like I said, J.J. Redick said, you got to play a perfect game against the Cavs to beat them. And they're right there. And so if you could add one more piece to this, I'd do it. I'm just not giving up anything that is rock solid. Like, no one in the core four is going anywhere. So.
Well, no. And I asked Matt, all right, so how far would you go in the rotation? And he said he would give up anybody other than the core four guys, Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, and Caris LeVert. And I agree with him. I say that because of this. There are a couple of guys I like on the roster who I think have done a really nice job that I would be hesitant to give up. However, the team is so based around the four players and Caris as the key guy coming off the bench. I like Max Strus, And as Matt said, but could you upgrade there? Probably. I like George Niang. I think Sam Merrill's a terrific shot. I think Dean Wade has a specific role that works for him.
Is a specific set of skills.
Isaac Okoro, I think you could move on from Isaac, and he could be somebody who is intriguing to another team.
Yeah, I think that I agree with.
I wonder about Craig Porter Jr. Is he ever going to get a chance here? Nope. Mm-hmm. I would be hesitant to move on from Jalen Tyson. I just kind of like his all-around game out on that wing. And he might be the answer out there eventually, but he's a young guy. He's only 22 still, just turned 22. And as a rookie, it might not be the time. So if you could package a player, a pick, some second-round stuff for a guy that might get moved by the trade deadline, I wouldn't mind trying to upgrade. And if you had to package two guys, something like that, to get an upgrade for someone that you could consistently play at the small forward spot. And the skills I would be looking for there wouldn't necessarily be anybody who has to dominate the ball, handle the ball on any great basis. You have two of those guys in Darius and Donovan.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be looking for a 6'8", 6'9" guy with a good outside shot. And there are a couple of those guys available. You just saw some names of people who were speculating these guys might get moved by the trade deadline.
Yeah.
We thought there were a couple of intriguing names in there. And I before you even said anything, I said, stop me when you get to Kyle Kuzma's name.
Yeah, that was the first one you had said.
And Kuzma would be interesting. You know, a guy who can knock down shots. The only question there is, are you tinkering with what's been great chemistry? And are you tempting fate? You've been so good.
Isn't this where the words due diligence come in? To bring somebody in that you think...
Kuzma had issues with the Cavs fans in the past, remember?
It's got to be instant pudding, though. You can't, right? You're not bringing somebody in that could stir the pot a little. That's the last thing you can do on this team.
You would have to have someone who would come in and be an immediate locker room fit. Immediate. Because that seems to be what they have right now. Everybody fits, everybody works.
Yeah.
And, you know, what... If a team wants to get out of a contract, we all know how these trades work. And if you could find someone who you thought would be, and think about it, you've got Evan and Jarrett, who are big guys who do their things, are not consistent outside three-point shots. Okay, so you're not looking to those guys for outside shooting, and you have Donovan who can shoot from the outside, Darius who certainly can. But they're handling the ball a lot and doing small guard things as well. If you had that guy out on that wing who you could kick the ball to and know he's going to drain a three-pointer on a regular basis, more consistently, maybe at a higher clip than the guys you have on the roster right now, I think you would have to look at that.
The other names that we had talked about, this was SI just put out a list, I think it was 10, top 10 players that could be moved at the trade deadline. The other names that came out for us were
Cam Johnson.
Cam Johnson was one, and then
Brooklyn,
and Bruce Brown would be the other from Toronto. So, and he's hurt. I mean, he's not the same guy that was that we've seen before from Denver when he played in Denver. So, he only played in four games this year. I don't know. It'd be interesting. He just came back like last week.
But that's where you're going to have to really trust your scouting, your process.
Yeah.
Everything else, and know that you have something that's certainly not broken.
Well, and like,
but can you take it and make it even better?
What's the fear is that we have a great regular season team that isn't ready for the playoffs?
You mean right now?
Yeah. And
well, how do you make the team better for the playoffs? You know how you make it better for the playoffs? I would think, and I unfortunately I'm doing it with Boston in mind. Somebody other than Evan. Who I think can get in the way of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I don't know if Darius or Donovan are the guys defensively to take care of that situation. And there's certainly a height advantage for the Boston guys. I think Jaylen Brown is 6'6 and Tatum's 6'8. You know, that's huge, huge size advantage there for the Boston Celtics. And if you put Evan on that, who's that leave for Boston? Porzingis, if he's healthy.
Right.
So that Jarrett's going to deal with Porzingis and or Al Horford.
I'm ready for that series right now, aren't you? You good? You ready? Can we just go right to the NBA Finals? Is there a fast-forward button on this thing?
No, there is not. And, of course,
we could have another in-season tournament. That would be great.
The most important thing the Cavs need
leading up. That in-season cup was a good time. That was a good game.
Yeah.
Most important thing the Cavs need leading up to that is good health.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Good health.
Yeah, that's true. That's the one thing that could send this thing sideways. I try not to think about that, though.
Yeah, I know. I don't blame you for not thinking about it.
It's been a lot of fun. I hope that they can keep this thing going all year. And you're right. It's not about, we see how it's working. We see how they bought in. We've talked about the chemistry. We've talked about how that they've been able just to do this night in and night out, and they seem battle-tested. Again, everyone's, oh, the schedule's getting harder. It's going to get harder. And then when you're past, you're like, oh, well. And then the national media will be like, oh, well, it's regular season.
The Cavs have played 36 games. Jared Allen has played in all 36 games. Donovan and Darius have played in 35 of the 36 games.
Yeah, but
Evan Mobley's missed only two games so far. Ty Jerome has played in 35. George Niang has played in all of them. Caris LeVert has missed six games. So, in other words, the big guns on this team have been out there for all of these games. You know, that's not been the case around the NBA. Take a look around the NBA. There have been a lot of teams missing really key guys. And, you know, Orlando's had issues. Banchero's been out. Philadelphia has had major injury situations with Joel Embiid and Paul George to a lesser extent because they're not really a contender. Scotty Barnes has missed big time for Toronto, who the Cavs play tonight. Scotty's a really good player. And there have been guys who have been out. Porzingis wasn't ready at the start of the season for Boston, and he's been in and out. So things they have to deal with there. Chris is in Chicago, Illinois. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Chris.
Guys, great show, you guys. And actually, I did appreciate the hockey talk earlier.
It was just for you, Chris. Just for you.
I appreciated that. Hey, real quick, before I get to my Cavs question, why is it, I'd like you guys to find this out for me. I subscribe to The Athletic. How is it that the Cavs don't have a beat writer and the Blue Jackets do? That's a question to think about, and it's kind of weird to me. But anyway, not to say that fourth line doesn't.
They did have one, but I'm guessing business decision. So, there you go.
I know, but anyway. But Jeff, I agree with you. I mean, I think really the one thing that's holding the Cavs possibly back this year, I mean, would be the potential for injury, and it's a team that over the years certain guys have been out. And to your point, this year, you know, so far, knock on wood, they've avoided that. And that's the most important thing, in my opinion. And if you were going to trade a non-core guy, my vote would actually be for Caris LeVert, which I know goes against what you just said, Jeff. But he hasn't impressed me as much as I thought he would. He always killed the Cavs when he was on, like, the Nets and the Pacers. He has not been, I think, the player that the Cavs wanted when they traded for him. That's just my thought, but great show as usual, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Appreciate you listening, Chris. Caris, of course, has the history with Kenny Atkinson going back to the Nets days.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like Caris as your third guard there. And you can play him on the wing along with Donovan and Darius. But I think that's as good of a three-guard combination as you're going to have in the league. I think it's really solid. I personally wouldn't move from him, but I'm a little partial. I've always liked Caris's game.
We were talking about wear and tear on these guys and, you know, games played and stuff like that. So I sort of just wanted to take a look at minutes. And Donovan Mitchell's like, I don't even think he's in the top 25. He's averaging 31.4. I think having these big leads late in the game has saved and shaved some minutes off of significant playing time. So, and Donovan's the only one that on the Cavaliers, it's averaging more than 31 minutes per game. Evan's averaging just over 30. Darius Garland's at 30. So everybody else is less than 30 minutes per game.
That's great.
Yeah, that's
Kenny Atkinson said he was going to play a deep rotation. Yeah. He's been a man of his word, and it's worked. You know,
see if it has legs. That's the whole thing.
Well, that's perfect. Perfect thought.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at
it. And when you get to the playoffs, do you tighten it up or do you continue to roll with what, you know, dance with what brung you?
Tyrese Maxey's going 37.3 minutes a game in Philly.
Yeah, that's a lot of minutes. But you know what, though, Andy? I mean, take a look at, like, Magic Johnson back in the day. Take a look at the guys back in the day. Training wasn't as good. They're playing 36, 37 minutes a night.
LeBron is still going 30, almost 35 minutes a night. Kyrie
is
going.
He's 47.
And he's 47? That was the fastest 7 years and 7 days I've ever heard for anybody. Kyrie Irving's going almost 36 minutes a game. So Durant is over 36 minutes a game. A lot of old guys up there. And I say old guys like we're not old guys.
Yeah, well, we're not running up and down NBA courts.
Oh, man.
You tried dragging Bob Lanier's, you know. Oh, wait a minute. That was Jabbar. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was.
I just,
and fly a plane at the same time.
I do think the front office has some decisions to make. And the biggest decision might be, the best decision might be, no, we're good. Nope, we're good. And not do a thing. We'll see what they do, because it's going to be a critical thing moving forward here as they approach the trade deadline coming up next month.
Donovan Mitchell is out tonight for the Cavaliers against the Toronto Raptors for rest purposes.
Dan, you said earlier in the show, can't wait to see who's in, who's out tonight.
Mm-hmm. I was waiting for this one to turn into the,
You assumed somebody would be, and you assumed correctly.
Yeah, I had a feeling we were going to see a couple rests after this one, after that game. So, it's well-earned. You play this well, you get those kind of things. So, we'll see who else. But right now, Donovan Mitchell out with rest. Sam Merrill questionable with the ankle injury, likely a game-time decision.
Can I just throw this out at you? If there's a one guy out of the group that you thought, ooh, didn't have the best of games, and yet they won despite that, it was clearly Donovan Mitchell. He was 3 of 16 shooting. So maybe I would assume there's nothing wrong because he played last night, just had kind of an off shooting night, and maybe the Cavs are just thinking, let's give Donovan a night and let's get him back on track. Should we go with that?
Sure, we can do that.
All right, let's go with that. I think that's exactly what we'll do.